Everyone, I'm Rob Aspero, and on screen or on the digital bandwidth, I've got Brett Almasan Cesar, former coach, retired coach at Archbishop Mini School or Archbishop Mini High School, Lincoln High School back in the 90s, back when grunge was cool. Hey, I thanks for taking the time with me. And, you know, I've always enjoyed our times because the only time I'd see you is at the marquee events, which would be CIF State Championships, or at the Durango Fall Classics. So Brett, hey, I've got to ask you the first and most important question of all, but how did you get into coaching?
Well, I married a volleyball coach, or I was engaged to a volleyball coach. He was coaching at Club Stockton Volleyball Club. And the head coach at that time there was John Dunning, who was at UOP at the time, and I was a mortgage broker. And so I was listening to how Socratic and how he taught kids. And I thought, if I could communicate that well, I could sell more mortgages and make more money. So I decided to hang out with him for a season. And he says, okay, you can't hang out with me. You got to take one of these teams. And it was a 14-4s team. I don't even know the year, 14-4s. And sort of had a blast. And then realized, well, maybe this is what I want to do in the long run. Maybe I do want to just be a teacher, be a teacher and a coach. Mm-hmm. And then to get the Lincoln job, I figured it was just going to lock in getting hired as a teacher. So I took the Lincoln job in 93. Mm-hmm. And I guess the rest is history.
Wow. Now, you've obviously been pretty good at what you're doing and influencing all these kids. But one of the things that caught my eye was in your Elevate Yourself podcast or video interview, you identified Archbishop Mitty's pillars of culture, I think is what you referred to it as, of commitment, selflessness, always improving, integrity, unfailing spirit, and always striving to compete. And you referred to it as the chorus line culture. How did you come up with these team pillars or values?
It's not me. I think as a coach, you're still a teacher. The most sacred part is the teaching. And the most sacred thing to do when you teach is to empower. You know, so you allow the kids to select those things. I mean, you influence. I mean, hard work, selflessness, integrity. But I think as we grew as a program, we just learned and learned more about ourselves and what made us successful. In the early 2000s, it was about just competing. Let's get back to the how we were in the early 90s with Gary, or the mid 90s with Gary. It was about competing. It was about working hard. And as we grew up, we added more of that selflessness and integrity. And I think that led to the culture that we created in the six in a row.
Now,
we lived by the adage. We lived by the adage, you take care of us and we'll take care of you.
Hmm. Now, with Archbishop Mitty being it's a Catholic school, it just seemed that a lot of the pillars and the culture, the values he had came from the Bible. Is selflessness, always improving, unfailing, and striving to compete. It must have been, you know, one of the things like having such a foundation, encouraging your team. Now, how did you get your athletes to get on board with the pillars or your mission statement for the team?
That's a good question. You're going to have to ask one of them. You know, they don't all buy in. But I think as soon as you start putting rings on and start seeing success in the program, and then that success trickles down to the individual getting scholarships and recognition, I think that helps them buy in. You know, mm-hmm. A reward sort of situation. It's like, okay, this works. And since it works, I get to be part of something bigger than me, and somehow they've get that feeling mm-hmm. That this is how the world should be. And I think you're right. I think in the MIDI system, there's a lot of teaching of the Bibles, and the Bibles, the Gospels. Uh-huh. And I think they learn a lot from them. I mean, you got to look at our whole school. You got Sue Phillips with the basketball program. I think she has 6 state championships. You've got Tim Kennedy with state championships in men's basketball. You've got, we've had a golf state championship. So the culture there is what we took, and then we went on top of that.
Right. Well, actually, that's a great segue for my next question, because also in that Elevate Yourself podcast, you mentioned or you alluded to the Archbishop Mitty prayer as a foundation for your team. And a commitment that each of your players had to do was create a player or some kind of mission statement for themselves. Can you share with us what that was and the kind of impact it had on your program with challenging them to create their own mission statement, so to speak?
I think at the beginning we had a prayer. Before I got there, they had a program prayer. And we made it annual. It continued on and on and on. And every so often, if we had a kid that was, we call them fourth years, we don't call them seniors, they were a fourth year or third year in the program, if they wanted to rewrite a section of the prayer, they could. So that would change with our culture. I mean, I remember adding choose the right instead of the easier wrong. I remember them choosing that we don't give thanks in our prayer. So they added that. Mm-hmm. The commitment is what we say before every practice, and that identifies those values. And then from there, you start asking the kids, okay, what's important to you, and how does it align with the Monarch Volley program and the MIDI school and the MIDI mission? And so it just helps them buy into the whole picture.
Yeah. Now, how's it for you as a coach and a mentor to see how you have personally impacted each of your athletes' lives, not only on the court, but off the court?
I don't know if I do.
The coach of 20 years.
I just saw... I'm going to cry. See what you're going to do to me. A kid just saw, I posted my house being built. And so we got in a little conversation on Facebook, whatever. And then I said something. The fact is, I enjoy watching your story and how you become a wonderful woman, and an attorney. Never thought it meant a lot. It's just what I'm telling you. It's neat to see them grow. It's neat to see that they identify with some of those values, because I think they're the right thing. You know, I don't think it's about winning. I think winning is a product of the values. And again, I didn't know that at the beginning.
Yeah.
I just learned that later.
Well, it's amazing seeing when I met you in the early 2000s, but you have a special relationship, even as an outsider, that I can observe with you and your team. But I mean, now coming to know your personality, you're very welcoming, warm-hearted, and it's easy to get on board with whatever you're doing. It's like you were able to create a culture that they could easily buy into. So that goes on for their lifetime. And you can see it in the players they've influenced. Mm-hmm. Nicole Davis is one of them. I mean, I'll drop some anteater names that I know. Marin Colty. You know, and I know that Shannon didn't play for you, Fleming. She's actually with the rival school, but she speaks so highly of you. And it intrigued the relationship of
Shannon played for me. Shannon played for me.
Shannon
played for me, which is the one from – yeah, Shannon was on that 08-09 team. The other Fleming, the one,
her sister, her cousin,
Illinois and Pacific.
Yeah. She
did. Yeah. Her cousin.
Yes.
She played for me in 14s and then she made her. there's another Fleming, but Shannon played for me. She played on that team with, Christina Grave, and she went to St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
Marin, the left Taylor Smith. She was at Irvine for a while.
Yep. That's right.
Rachel Williams, Stanford. John Calorio, Cal. Yeah, that team was pretty good. It's the first team you saw.
Yeah.
Us with at the Bryn.
Yeah.
Where you played our music.
That's right.
Thank you very much.
Don't unveil the secret. That was the connection right there.
it's all about the music.
Well, I know that from your coaching career, you've mentioned John Denning, but I wanted to find out some of the other influences on your coaching style and give us some examples of how they've contributed to your coaching style.
When you said you were going to ask me this question, well, John and that whole crew at Pacific back then, Joe Wartman, who ended up being the men's coach,
mm-hmm.
Who's now at St. Mary's, Monica Bada, who was the technical director before there were technical directors, who would just go through VHS tapes for run. And I honestly say that we won my junior national championship because of Moss and a tape he showed me. I'm like, we can be this team. And mm-hmm. we modeled that team on stage, 1999. And we modeled that team and won JOs with it. So I look at those three as my volleyball ones directly. I'm always looking to learn from anybody online. Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be somebody from Skidinkyville High School. Do they say the right thing? But I think where I go to the nth degree is I don't necessarily look at volleyball coaches. I'm more into looking how Pete Carroll does stuff. I'm looking to see how Miss Val at UCLA Gymnastics does things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a guy named Paul Rennick, how he teaches the drum. My friend Mikey B, who was a warrant officer in the Green Beret. Mm-hmm. I think they give you more valid ways that if you can transition it to volleyball in life, then we have that extra competitive edge.
Right.
That if I can watch Magnus chess and how he practices the chess world championship, then what can we take from that? Mm-hmm. When you watch a basketball game with a football coach and say, how does that work? How does that work in your world? Oh, we can steal that. Or why in baseball do you drop step and cross step more than we do, right? Why we never cross step and we never drop step unless we have to. Well, baseball mm-hmm. guys do it all the time. Well, why? And then we steal their stuff. It's easier. What's her name? Monica. Is it Monica from Cheer? The passion she brings to her program, that TV show on Netflix, Cheer, cheerleading coach, amazing.
And you said you cut all cable. At least you have your Wi-Fi. You're watching Netflix still. That's good. Did I lose you there? Oops, where are we at? We're back on? There we go.
Okay, there you go.
You got the cheer. That was the last comment. But let's...
Okay. Yeah, Monica. Monica
on Cheer on Netflix.
His name was Monica, yeah. Good show. So they're competitive and they're presenting a show. That's what we do.
Yep, yeah. Well, so you wore many hats as a coach these last 20 plus years. And, you know, and you did it very well. I think it's funny on everything I've read, second most wins in the state. I've been searching for who number one is. Do you know who that is? Who's got the most wins in the state?
She was at Centennial High School. She was at Centennial High School when Janae Henry was there. Brooke, what was Brooke's name? I know it if I saw it. Her name's Brooke. I worked with her at Stanford once. Mm-hmm. She was there forever at Centennial High School when they won their state championships. Really nice lady, really good person.
I was like,
Mark Tennis, Cal High Sports.
He's the one that would know. I should ask him.
Yeah, Mark Tennis would know. Our sport doesn't keep those kind of records well enough. I'm sure people like Carrie have got to be close. I've got to believe that Danny's close. You know, those kind of people have been here longer than me.
Yeah. Well, so let me ask you this. I tangented it off because I'd been trying to find who has the most wins being unsuccessful. I thought maybe you'd know, but you know, I guess I'll have to hit Dan at Cal High. But I got to ask, how did you do your job well, even amid being a high school teacher, math teacher at that, a club coach, as well as a high calibered team coach for the program that you're with at MIDI?
My degree's in finance. It's a business degree. So I firmly believe in objectives. And you know, you manage by objectives. What do we want to achieve here? And then you just check off the benchmarks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like my master's thesis is how to build the most successful volleyball program, high school volleyball program imaginable. And we talk about just teaching to objectives, learning to objectives, and doing those sort of things. It's like, you know, you just find objectives and then you just go hard at them, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, teaching Algebra 2 and making sure Sally knows how to do, you know, linear equations, mm-hmm. or, you know, Nicole Davis can pass a ball, or, you know, making sure I can get my house cleaned to sell and packed to get up to El Dorado County. Because my wife has struggled with some of the emotions of leaving a home of 20 years. And I'm like, no. Margie Walsh says we got to do this. Let's just get it done.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
Well, now, as far as identifying talent on your team, do you feel that you develop like a sixth sense to determine who would be successful in your program? Because you have had quite a bit of talent come through.
I think, you know, you can't look past athleticism, but like you were talking about the dollars and pillars and stuff, I'm looking for the kid that cleans up at the end. I'm looking for the kid that, you know, does the extra rep. I'm looking for the kid that wants to help other people look good. You know, those are the kids that are going to be successful and make a program successful. We don't have that many superstars, you know, that go on and become NCAA first team All-Americans, but we have a bunch of players that are going to be good teammates, and good teammates make great teams. And then the physical talent, you know, everybody can see that part, mm-hmm. you know, I'd hope, you know,
yeah.
When Amanda Gill from UCLA walks in, him at 6'4" and 14, it's like, somebody put her on the team. I know she can't walk straight. I know she can't sit down, but she sits more. That's the easy part. Now let's just make sure, you know, that she's the right kid for our roles. You know, I had a kid one time and I called her Salt. And she goes, why do you call me Salt? I go, I don't know what you do for us, but you know those recipes where they ask for a pinch of salt? And if you, like, why do you need the pinch of salt? You need to take it out, and then the recipe tastes like crap. So every you got to look for that pinch of salt sometime.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Well, you know, kind of related in the next question, because of the amount of, well, the 2+ decades that you've been coaching, and given the different generations that have come through, have you had to change, adjust, or adapt your coaching style for millennials, Gen Y, Gen X, Gen X, and then iGen and Gen Z? I mean, because I imagine that's a real struggle for coaches or anyone that's in teaching in academics or in public schools or schools, period.
I think everything has to evolve. And as our children's expectations evolve, then we have to evolve to those expectations. I'm not going to say we're softer, but I think we're not as, back to business, Theory X degree, Theory X managers, we're not, you got to do this or you're not going to play. Mm-hmm. I don't believe that works anymore. I don't believe as much for punishment as I do reward. I don't think We compete as much. I think it's that feeling of being competitive. It's kind of like when you're planning on winning a state championship. We never planned on winning a state championship. We were just trying to put the best show we could get at the end, and then trying to make sure that the kids realize, you know, we've got to go plus one today. You know, so I think culture has evolved that people want to be their best self, their best self. And so we can the adage of got to be plus one today. You got to be plus one until there is nothing else. And there's all, you can always take the next step. You know, you can always do one more push up. And that's what I think I change as a culture is expecting effort to improve. And back then it was like, no, you'll pass the ball at 45 degree angle and freeze the target. And if you don't, you're not going to play.
Well, then
I don't think that works anymore.
let's go back to on the court type of stuff here. Now, this is probably gonna be really tough being you've got so many of these state championships, but is there a most memorable state championship or a memorable team unit that you had?
The one I watched on YouTube last. well, your first is always memorable, and your last is always memorable. And so that's 01, and that's, I don't know, what year is this, 2017. 08-09, that team, you know, that went 73-1 over 2 years.
Amazing.
Pretty exciting. That was when Russ and his crew were like trying not to lose a set, and I'm like, we can do that. No, we can't do that. and then the six in a row, just, it started merging together, right? Because we won 08 or not 08 or 09. We won 12. We were undefeated in 12.
Wow.
And then 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, they started merging. And I guess 17 and 18 are cool because they were open championships at state.
Yeah, which is in a just a, so such a deadly division in state.
Well, I remember when we won the first, they go, are you going to do it again? I go, nobody's ever going to win two in a row. Are you kidding me? And then we did.
Well, you're not nobody. That's why. No. Now, are there any players that have surprised you in their careers, be it in volleyball or non-volleyball related post-MIDI?
Post-MIDI?
So like they've gone on to become professionals and just would have never anticipated, not because they didn't have the ability, but just someone that you take pride in, like, oh, I got to be a part of that season of life for them.
I don't think any of them ever surprised me. Because we expect them to get better and then maybe they surprise themselves. But I think if I thought of one that surprised me, no, not really. I mean, that's just enchantment, Nicole Davis. I think Allie Wheeler's, I guess, surprises me. I remember having the conversation of whether she could be a setter or go play sand. And I'm like, go to USC and play sand. Why not? That sounds like fun. But as athletes, no, I think they're all pretty special and they all get what they deserve wherever they go.
You know, in the interview in volleyballmag.com, I did not ask this question, so I wanted to save it for the podcast because I definitely want to maybe even just kind of create questions on the fly as you respond. But do you plan on stepping entirely out of the game at this point? And what plans do you have? I mean, being that you're such a decorated coach.
I don't think that's possible because I get bored. I could see myself as an assistant coach. I don't know about that. I could see myself as like a consultant. I could see myself going down to Santiago and being your sidekick. You can do the play-by-play and all the excitement. I'll do the
that would be awesome. I would love that.
I would. I think it would be pretty entertaining. but I love the game. I love what the game does to people. You know, in a game that's so highly cooperative. I don't miss it right now. I honestly can say with all this COVID happening, I don't miss it right now. But I can see myself looking to do those sort of things. I like building teams. You know, I could go work for a marching band. I could go work for some corporation and just build teams and build culture. I think that's what we've done best. You know, we've had strong assistant coaches that take care of all that technical stuff. Mm-hmm. But I get excited about talking about teams. I get excited about talking about the Bali dork stuff. You know, asking people why they do things. You know, I look at some price, I go, well, why do you do it that way? Well, because we've done it that way 100 years. I go, well, no, the game's not that old. But have you considered this? I think it's exciting. I think that'd be fun.
Well, one of the things I wanted to ask you is I was trying to piece together a timeline, but did you ever coach against Kerry Walsh Jennings? I was trying to look at the NorCal record.
Yes.
And I was like, what was the result?
Wait a sec. Let me grab my phone. As I was going through all the boxes on the move, uh-huh. I found an article in Stockton Record from like 1996. Mm-hmm. And it reads, let me find it. How do you get to
photos? Is it a picture of the newspaper?
Yeah.
Oh, you got to send that to me.
Stockton team. It's from March 5th, 1996. Stockton team drops defending national champ. Brett Amazon Cesar still can't believe that his club Stockton volleyball 18 blue, a second team. Thank you. Did. But apparently it's going to cost him a lunch. This 18 blue team, which is the club's second team, stunned Northern California Volleyball Association when it knocked off defending national champion Team Mizuno. And get these scores, 215. Yeah, we lost 215. 15-13 and 17-15.
And that was
Coley was on that game, I think. No. Who was? Yeah, that was Kerry's team. Now, Nicole Davis hadn't played yet. And we're going to dinner on me. I just don't know where yet. They're just a team of kids working hard. Every so often, David beats Goliath. So, yeah, that was I have that article right here.
You got to send that my way.
I'm definitely going to put that on the meeting. Okay. Well, I found two articles. I have also the one where Mighty Lincoln beat the number one team in the world, in the country, called Archbishop Mitty. I have that ball still too.
And that was Kerry's team.
That wasn't Kerry's team. Okay. That was 97. That was the year, 2 years after she graduated.
So there obviously is forgiveness in the family because she allowed you to marry in somehow, some way. And when I had her on the podcast,
I tell.
She said you're grandfathered in. So forgiveness goes a long way.
Yeah. That's just because I married my wife. I mean, I always tell Mimi, if Nicole or Kerry mentions me, they always mention my wife. She's much more influential to them. Because Mimi coached against Kerry when she was like 12, 13, 14. Mm-hmm. So They've been buddies longer than me.
Well, you know, given this time in history, I was going to ask this question because I know that you're a very compassionate person. And, you know, I know that you care deeply. I mean, even as a high school teacher, but as a coach and knowing the relationship between athlete and coach, teacher and student, but you have a very mentor shepherding heart, we'll say. But when the world virtually started locking down because of coronavirus concerns, and what did you feel and think for your student athletes going into the 2020 season? Obviously that, you know, you didn't know you're going to retire, but I know that you had a heart for what's happening in this time in history. And were you able, what did you tell them, or what would you tell them if you didn't get a chance to? Because I know that you're such an inspiration for your athletes.
Well, our objective was that we were going to prepare as best as we could with what we could do. So the August 7th date was the date that we had benchmarked for, okay, the soonest we could come back is August 7th. So somehow we're going to get together, whether it's calling Carrie and doing a Zoom meeting with Carrie, whether it's working out together on Zoom, whether the small times we got into the gym, we're going to get in the gym and do what we've always done, and that's be plus one. You know, what can we do today that will make us better tomorrow? And we were always talking about that. And then further and further, as we got deeper and deeper, I'm sitting there going, well, we're not going to have a season. What's the best thing we can do for these kids? And I mean, I think that's what we got to always think, is given the situation, you know, how do you go plus one? How do you find benefit in it? How do you learn to make yourself better? I think that's what we always try to do, is whatever your situation, make the best of it. And then, you know, make yourself better. Find a way, ask yourself, I know I don't know how to get better, but if I did, you know, how would I be better? You know, is there somebody I can ask, you know, what can I do to be better right now? Whether it's doing push-ups or watching cheer on Netflix, or watching, you know, right now I'm watching home improvement shows. You know, what is better? You know, is there an easier way for me to rate these leaves here? There's got to be. You make sure you have a house with evergreens. When your house has evergreens, I don't want to rake again in my life. But I think that's what I think kids need to always know is you can always be plus one. If you can do 20 push-ups, do 21. If you can do 50 push-ups, do 51. You know, if you did 10 reps, do 11. But you always take one more breath, and you can always take one more step. And I think we've taught that very well at MIDI in the last bit, that you can always go one more step. And that's what I would do in COVID or whatever's going on here. You know, how do we make this better? It's like I said, well, I've already packed my studio. When I knew we were going to be on these screens for 6 months, it's like, okay, let's get the microphone. Let's get the lights. Let's do the background. It looks pretty spectacular. Mm-hmm. But we're going to make the best of it.
Yeah.
Because it sucks.
Yeah, it's a tough time in history, and I couldn't even imagine being someone who's youth or in college and having to go through this. I mean, because we are a social culture, and you know, obviously the whole world is impacted by this, and you know, it's just a tough time. So you know, with that, I mean, I wanted to,
especially our athletes, you know, it's a social sport. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, you don't have to communicate with people. You don't have to be able to, you have to have relationships. You have to communicate.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of kids that are successful.
Well, you know, I actually skipped a question, but one of my memories every year of going into the state, it's like, there are certain things. One was, I was going to see you, but two, hearing the discussions of the opposing coaches that would play you. Like, man, we got MIDI. But all of them have the utmost respect for you, as you for them. I mean, and I say this because, you know, I've known Carrie Klein for a long time at Marymount, back when it was Carrie Delson, even. I've known her that long. Dan O'Dell, I saw him play for the national championship for Penn State against UCLA in Happy Valley. Brennan Dean. Yes. I mean, all these guys have the utmost respect for you, and they're going to miss a very intense competitor who always brought the best out in them. So I know that and from a fan standpoint, someone who watches a game, I'm going to miss seeing the teams that you've created, because they were always fun to watch. Even some of the names, Kawili, Cameron Kawili. I always remember that one. Like, just ignore certain letters and say this.
And I think, I mean, it's flattering, because that's how I look upon them, is that, you know, I appreciated the challenge of that, you know, and again, we were putting together a show. So we wanted to compete, but we wanted to look, I always tell them, I go, you need to be entertaining, because people only want to watch things that are good. You don't go watch a team. So how do you entertain them, and what, you know, what degree is this going to be a show?
Yeah.
I mean, we're not Showtime. We're not the Lakers. But it's got to be entertaining, because that's what good things are.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to read this. This is from the San Jose Mercury. Is that the correct paper?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it summarized your career, and I definitely want people to know. Over 20 years of coaching high school volleyball, Coach Almasan Cesar has produced 7 national championships, 6 California Teams of the Year, 11 state championships, 16 NorCal championships, 17 section championships, 17 league championships, and over 800 career wins. Been named National Coach of the Year 4 times and Coach of the Year by the Mercury News, Max Preps, Cal High Sports, USA Today. Max Preps has recently named the Mini Women's Volleyball Program Team of the Decade. Incredible resume. And it's going to be sad to not see you on that side of the court. Or on the court, but I look forward to what your future has for you, because I mean, I've always enjoyed my conversations with you and just talking shop, and I know that you can volley geek out like I can, and I'm going to keep your name if I get these opportunities to stream and to get you on board, because I would love to have you doing some stuff. I think we'd be a good team.
I think it'd be fun. I got 9 more wins to be the winningest. That's what I know. So that's the sad part.
So you're going to take a job where?
That's what my wife said. She goes, you can do 9 wins anyway. People have called, but not yet.
Well, hey, Brett, I cannot thank you enough for your friendship and just for all you've done for high school girls volleyball and beyond, because you've developed some incredible people whom I've come to know, and one of them being Nicole Davis, and obviously – you know, some even names like Nicole Liddell, of all people, you know, all these athletes of your former athletes of yours who I've come to know beyond the mid years, who are just incredible people. Allie Wheeler. Congratulations, I guess, on your retirement. I look forward to this next season of life and what that has for you in a ball standpoint, because I know I haven't seen the last of you, but I definitely look forward to it.
I'm just moving on. I'm too young to retire. I'm moving on.
You're moving on. Well, thank you for coming. Thank you for coming on the show, and I look forward to you know, connecting with you hopefully in the near future. Because when ball starts happening again, I'm going to try and look into that opportunity, see if I get something in. But thanks for taking the time on the podcast.
Sounds good.
You're watching you were listening to Brett Almasan Cesar, Archbishop Mitty. And Lincoln, I got to give them props too, because he did some great stuff there, and just a phenomenal teacher, person, coach.